You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about how all our screen time gives us less opportunity to practice empathy and what to do about this. But first, let's get an update on our WPR Winter Member Drive that is officially underway. I'm here with Maureen McCollum. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
And this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for these interesting conversations, and then we count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
Yeah, listener support is the largest piece of funding that makes this show and all the others that you enjoy possible. That's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And this hour, we have a goal of 10 gifts. 10 gifts. These hourly goals are so important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussion going strong here on the Ideas Network. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has a unique funding model. It's a two-way street that creates a high-quality product. This is how it works. You voluntarily contribute, and in turn, you get back programs that are accountable only to you.
Really an amazing system. I love public radio. And you get programs worth listening to precisely because you step up and support them. So make your contribution for the independent news you hear, for the information, the music you love. Help pay for all the programs you enjoy on WPR and here on the Ideas Network at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners, make the programs here on Wisconsin Public Radio, programs like The Morning Show, worthwhile. And members make the programs possible.
You get all these great shows because members, people like you who donate, kick in the largest chunk of funding for WPR programs. So become a member now. Help make WPR possible this morning with your gift of $100 or $10 a month, any amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Where do you want to go for your next vacation?
I would go to New York City and see some Broadway shows.
I would go to the UP to ski.
Someplace warm. I would take a friend of mine and we'd just go chill out on the beach.
Give any amount and you could win a $500 travel agency gift card for your next adventure. 5 winners will be drawn. Sustainers, you are automatically entered. Find out all the details at WPR.org/drawing. Make your gift of any amount now to be automatically entered. Here's how.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm here with Maureen McCollum. It's listener support that is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on each day. And that is why your support during this winter member drive so critical. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month, something in between. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
And giving to WPR is easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
That donation will come back to you every single day in the form of great programs. So show your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
We have 50 minutes left this hour and we're looking to hear from 10 more people to join in. You make WPR possible with your gift at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
And a cool thing is, as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you'll have 5 chances to win a $500 travel agency gift card. No contribution is necessary. You can see all of the details at WPR.org/drawing. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And sustainers making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you for your support and you're automatically entered.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up the monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll provide ongoing support for the programs you love and get automatically entered in the drawings we have during member drives.
We heard from Derry in Eau Claire, who says, I have my first real job out of grad school, and I'm so excited to finally become a sustaining member. And from the morning show to Central Time, WPR makes my entire day richer. Derry, thank you so much for your support. Your gift is powerful. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks. Right now, we're looking at our plugged-in world and why empathy may be in short supply. Empathy is our ability to sense the emotions of another person and to understand what they're feeling and why. It's supposed to help us come together in times of joy and despair. It's supposed to prevent us from lashing out in anger. But what about in the digital realm? Do you use social media to share your opinions? How do friends and followers respond? How do your posts make you feel? The conversation here is at 800-642-1234. Join in again, 800-642-1234. Caitlin Ugalik-Phillips' new book is called The Future of Feeling, Building Empathy in a Tech-Obsessed World. Caitlin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's begin with the death of 18-year-old Michael Brown in 2014. He was fatally shot by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. The word spread so quickly on Twitter and other social media. What did you bear witness to in the conversation?
Yeah, I was following that conversation and that event on Facebook mostly at the time. I was spending a lot of time on Facebook, and a lot of my friends and colleagues were as well. And that's kind of where that was, like, our public square where we would have conversations about major things going on in the news. And that was probably one of the first times that I just noticed that people were really not necessarily thinking that much about the impact of their words on others when they posted them on social media. There was a lot of knee-jerk posts, and it was just kind of an awful situation. And then I had I made a post about something, and then a person that I had gone to high school with sent me a message kind of reprimanding me, telling me that I shouldn't, you know, be sharing an opinion about this because I wasn't a police officer and he was. And that all kind of just solidified this idea that I had that, you know, empathy was kind of starting to become harder for us to access the more we spoke to each other on social media.
And you felt like you didn't get a moment to maybe walk around to think about the police officer's words who had sent you a message, that it was more of this knee-jerk reaction. Can you give us some examples of a knee-jerk post?
Yeah, I definitely in that situation felt like both of us, you know, at the time I was offended, but then later on I kind of realized neither of us had really had that time in the urgency of posting online to access our empathy for one another. You know, examples might be, you know, if something happens in the news and you go and you just post, you know, this person should be fired, or I hate, you know, these people. But more often it's in a comment section. So someone says something, and before kind of trying to imagine where they might be coming from, feeling that urgency and defensiveness that you need to respond immediately. And, you know, and a lot of times that ends up harming a relationship.
Why does our attitude toward listening change when we're online? What happens?
One of the things that happens is that you're not able to hear another person's tone of voice, and you're not able to see their facial expressions. And I think that kind of puts up a wall a little bit, you know, helps, I mean, in a negative way, you kind of forget the humanity of other people sometimes. Also, because you have access to so many people online, it can kind of just, you can forget pretty easily that they're, you know, you're not talking to other people.
But how do we know for certain that technology is really to blame here for our lack of empathy? Where do we see the connections?
Yeah, so we don't know, you know, that it's to blame. The research on this is really interesting, and it's still kind of in the beginning stages. We see a lot of correlations, but not necessarily causation. But anecdotally, you know, with young people, parents, teachers, doctors are kind of starting to notice that young people who spend a lot of time looking at screens, playing games online, communicating online, are having a harder time with social skills like empathy.
And these are the same children who are also being taught empathy in schools. There are whole curriculums on kindness.
Right. And a lot of those curricula use technology as well. So that's kind of part of the, you know, contradiction of the book, where I talk about how technology has kind of helped amplify some of the problems that we have with empathy, but could also potentially be used to help, you know, bring us back to empathy.
With bullying online, users may troll others. There's this term called dox. What do you see when it comes to bullying?
Yeah, so on Instagram seems to be where a lot of the bullying happens with young people. And I was really interested to hear about one situation where sometimes people will aggressively like each other's posts. So kind of go back in time and look at everything they've ever posted and like it so that they get a ton of notifications. That's one really interesting way that people bully each other. There's also the issue of FOMO, fear of missing out. So kids will sometimes tag each other in images where they aren't, just to show them what's happening without them and kind of rub it in. So yeah, there's a lot of kind of nasty ways that you can be bullied on social media, especially Instagram.
Talking about our relationship with technology and the intersection of human emotion and feeling with Caitlin Ugalik-Phillips. Her new book is called The Future of Feeling. Do you find yourself sending a text or email instead of calling someone on the phone? Is it out of convenience or in an avoidance of real conversation? Join in 800-642-1234. There's more conversation ahead. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about our ability to track and sense emotions. We're looking at the role that empathy has in our lives here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. But before we go further, let's check in on our winter member drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Maureen McCollum. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening.
Listener support makes up the largest piece of the funding for the programs you count on. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
We're looking for 10 pledges this hour. We can get there. It's one pledge at a time. We have these hourly goals. They're so important. These goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy each day. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On The Morning Show and all day long on the Ideas Network, you hear multiple sides of an issue so you can make up your own mind. Together, we keep up with the issues of the day, have some fun, and follow our curiosity and learn.
There's really nothing else like this on the radio. It is something special. Your support is really vital as part of what makes this possible. The biggest chunk of our funding is listener support. So give right now during our winter member drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs you count on.
A great way to support WPR is by becoming a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
And many people give $10 or $20 a month. You choose whatever amount is right for you. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a cozy new thank you gift this drive. It's the WPR knit hat. Show off your support through our long Wisconsin winters with this white and navy cap featuring gold stripes and a burgundy palm. It's made in Wisconsin, and it'll be your new cold weather essential. Ask for yours when you give $20 a month or a one-time gift of $240 right now. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm here with Maureen McCollum. It's your support during this winter member drive that makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. And your gift of $10 or, say, $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Maybe you've already made a donation this year or you're a sustaining member. And if that's the case, thank you so much. Consider making an extra gift of, say, $50 or $100 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Join in this drive and thank you for your extra support for the programs you enjoy every day.
Here's what the leaderboard is telling us. We need 8 more pledges to come in this hour. We're looking for 8 more people to join in. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can support the programs you value and show off your WPR pride when you ask for the WPR knit hat. USA made right here in Wisconsin. It's also very cute.
It is so cute.
Give $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And look, if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up. You'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs you love.
I love hearing from the listeners during the member drives, Kate. We heard from Pat and Spencer, who says, WPR is my companion as I go about my daily tasks. Having listened to WPR since 1969, love the Ideas Network, especially the morning show, and really appreciate archived programs. Well, thank you so much for that comment, Pat, and thank you so much for your support. Be just like her and go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Your gift is powerful. It makes a difference. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, we're talking about empathy, this ability to understand and share the feelings of another person. It's been called the building block of morality, that you treat others the way you would want to be treated. But as tech devices become more central to our existence, where does that leave our ability to connect as human beings? Do you still feel things in the same way? Join this conversation. We're at 800-642-1234. Again, the conversation here is 800-642-1234. Caitlin Ugalik-Phillips is the author of the new book, The Future of Feeling, and she's our guide this hour. So, Caitlin, surveys by the census show that 2 out of 5 Americans feel their social relationships are not meaningful. 1 out of 5 feel lonely or socially isolated. Why are Americans feeling this way, even though there's this increased connectivity through our technology, through our devices?
Yeah, that's a great question that, you know, I think will take us a while to figure out. But for now, you know, one of the things that I've been reading about actually is that, and I didn't get to get into this too much in the book, but part of it is that we kind of think about loneliness a little bit differently because we are so plugged in all the time. Being on social media for several hours a day, which a lot of people are, can feel like you are in the midst of a lot of people. And then when you turn it off, it can kind of, you know, in comparison, your actual life can feel, you know, kind of empty compared to that. On the other hand, being on social media so much, you have the constant ability to compare your life to other people's lives. I like to say you're kind of comparing other people's outsides to your insides.
And their pictures too. The pictures,
right.
My goodness.
Exactly. And they don't necessarily give you a full picture of what someone's life is actually like. It's just kind of a curated version of what they want you to see. But that kind of gets into your head and you can start to, you know, do a lot of comparisons, and that leads to loneliness.
Earlier, you were mentioning studies looking at empathy in children. Mm-hmm. How much of a difference is there compared with past generations in what we see in children today?
So the best research on this is actually from 2010, which is now 10 years ago. So hopefully there's more in the works. But there was research done of young people, I think it was over 4,000 people, that showed that they had lower empathy than their cohorts several decades before had. These were college students. So they took these surveys, they did these tests, and found that they were showing less empathy than college students had several decades before. And then since then, the rush has been to figure out why that is. And it happened to coincide with the use of social technology and more technology being in our lives. It's hard, like I said, to make that exact connection. But the person who did that research did go on to create an app called Random App of Kindness that is meant to help people build empathy. So she saw a connection there.
What are tech companies feeling about this? Because there are even now ratings for companies in terms of how much empathy they exhibit. And tech companies like Facebook and LinkedIn, you say, are right there topping the list. You know, how are their services evolving when they are considered companies that have empathy?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like empathy over the last decade or so in the business world has become a little bit of a buzzword. And, you know, it's unclear whether that really matches what most people would actually think of as empathy. And it's interesting that there are these empathy indexes that kind of rank companies. But then if you ask the users of these products, and in some cases, people who work at these places, they would not consider them empathetic. So there definitely is a problem right now where there's an empathy gap between the people who initially created a lot of these products and technologies and the people who are now using them and working on them. And you see that in protests within companies like at Amazon, Facebook, and Google, and then in the broader public call for there to be more empathetic guidelines and practices of these companies.
So you're seeing that these companies are also struggling to figure out what this empathy really looks like internally.
Yes, and whether it's something that they really want to put resources into or just pay lip service to.
We're talking with Caitlin Ugalik-Phillips. Her book is called The Future of Feeling. How much time do you think you spend on your phone or digital device? Do you think you rely on it too much? Do you know of a space online where empathy is present? Where is that? Join in 800-642-1234. Email your thoughts to ideas@WPR.org. We'll be back after this news update. There's more conversation ahead about empathy. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're having a conversation about empathy and our ability to relate to each other as humans, even as we spend hours upon hours each day on our devices. But right now, let's get an update on our winter member drive that is going strong. I'm here with Maureen McCollum. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
Our goal is to keep bringing you conversations like the one we're having here on empathy. And it's conversations like this one that make us think, that make us, you know, look at our lives, maybe even differently, and then talk with each other here on the Ideas Network. Your support makes that happen because listener support is actually the largest source of funding for WPR programs. So give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have about 25 minutes left this hour, and we would love to hear from seven more people as they join in. And thank you so much to those of you who have already given.
If you haven't, give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
And in this hour of the morning show, we've been learning about how being constantly connected to phones and computers, how that impacts our ability to empathize. It's a super interesting, important discussions to help us better understand the world around us. And these are the kind of conversations that you can count on from the morning show.
WPR is listener supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, it makes the many topics that you join us for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that may be a gift of $1 or $200 a month.
Maybe that's what you pay for cable or your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day, so put a value on it, like the other things that are important to you in your life. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I just like to hear issues really fleshed out and not just soundbited. It's a good mix of local and national issues that are debated intelligently. I think Wisconsin Public Radio is important because we, the public, need to have a source that we can go to that is unbiased, that will have guests on who will present both sides of an issue. We can call in as members of the public and ask questions and get responses that are thoughtful, and I think that's really important. It's important to be informed. I'm John from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you so much, John. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to become a sustainer, to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm here with Maureen McCollum this morning, and it's your support today, right now, of Wisconsin Public Radio that keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. And whether your contribution is $10 a month, whether it's $100 a month, we appreciate and we truly count on your gift.
We ask that you make a contribution, and we also ask that you give an amount that's comfortable for you. Many people give $10 a month. Some people give $100 or more a month.
Whatever the amount, we'll use it to support the programs you enjoy, keeping your source for information, for entertainment, keeping you laughing and thinking, all of that on WPR going strong. So give now whatever amount feels right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, Kate, we got about 20 minutes left this hour, and we would love to hear from seven more people to join in. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, as that added bonus for supporting programs you love, you'll have five chances to win that $500 travel agency gift card. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
Your gift is so powerful and it truly makes a difference. Be sure to go to WPR.org to make your gift, or pick up the phone and call us at 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support.
Right now, we're spending the hour on empathy and our ability to sense the emotions of others and to understand what they're going through. But in our digital world, is human connection kind of lost? Consider this. The average adult spends about 10 hours a day consuming media, most of the time via screens. That's from Nielsen data. So do you think our society is tech obsessed? What makes you think so? Do you work in healthcare? What effect do devices have on patients' mental well-being? Join in this conversation. We're at 800-642-1234. Again, our conversation is at 800-642-1234. The new book is called The Future of Feeling, and author Caitlin Ugalik-Phillips stays with us. Caitlin, let's look at virtual reality for a moment. VR is sometimes advertised as immersing ourselves in another person's experience. Can this technology help improve empathy?
Yeah, that is the hope of a lot of people who are currently creating content for virtual reality headsets. For people who don't know, you know, a virtual reality is mostly done by putting on a headset on your head, but they're also full body versions of virtual reality, which I got to experience, which is pretty wild. But yeah, that's the hope. And again, you know, like a lot of things in the book, unfortunately, the research is still ongoing. But there's a lot of anecdotal research to show that if you sort of embody the experience of someone else in VR, you might feel more empathetic toward them.
When was an instance that you actually were able to feel virtual reality, and what went through your head?
Yeah, I got to do a virtual reality experience called 1000 Cut Journey. It was at a VR conference in New York a few years ago. And I put on the headset, I put on this backpack that tracked me as I walked around in a small space, and I had controllers. And I was embodying the experience of a young Black man as he goes through life and has different experiences with racism as he grows up. And the first thing that really struck me was when I have the headset on and I'm holding all the gear, and you kind of look down in VR and you see your hands, and they're the hands of this young Black man. So you really feel, okay, this is really a intense simulation here. And what really stuck with me after that experience, where, you know, I, as this man, was subject to all different kinds of discrimination, it wasn't that now I understood what it was like to be a young Black man. It was just really cemented for me how different our experiences were. And I think that's a way of opening up empathy.
What were you seeing through that headset? Could your brain detect microaggressions, say?
Yeah, so there were experiences where I was, you know, first a child in a classroom, and a kid was saying, you know, nasty things, and I threw a block at him, and the teacher only reprimanded me. And then there was, I was wearing a hoodie and going out to play basketball with a friend, and my mother was saying, you know, you can't go out like that because you match a description of someone the police are looking for. And then you actually go out onto the sidewalk and the police stop you to question you and tell you to get on your knees, and you have to physically get on your knees in the game, in the simulation.
There is another simulation that you experienced was from Planned Parenthood, a person seeing what it's like to access abortion services. What did that experience do?
Yeah, that one was a little bit different because instead of physically feeling like you're embodying the person, you just feel like you're riding along with them. So I was first in the back seat of a car as this woman drove up to a clinic to access services and was being accosted by protesters on the road all the way there. And then you're kind of sitting in the room with her as she talks to the provider, who is asking her, you know, are you unsure about doing this? And she's like, no, I'm just upset about all the protesting and the things people said. At the very end, it becomes an animated simulation, but the audio is real audio from protests. And you hear, you know, really awful things that people shout at women who go into Planned Parenthood clinics. And it just kind of gives you the experience of what that's really like.
Do you think these simulations are productive?
I think it depends on your experiences and thoughts going in. And that's one thing, you know, I want to emphasize about the book, is that all of these technologies I talk about are tools, right? Even social media is a tool. And the way that we use them and who we are going in really affect how they affect us. So I think with virtual reality, if you are already, inclined to believe something or agree with something, it's probably going to emphasize that. We know, you know, psychological research shows us that we also look for things to validate what we don't believe. But there is some anecdotal research showing that things like the Planned Parenthood VR can give people who don't necessarily agree with what Planned Parenthood does, still they end up with more empathy for the experience that a person has to go through with all of the protesters.
We're talking with Caitlin Ugalik Phillips, and she's the author of the new book, The Future of Feeling, Building Empathy in a Tech-Obsessed World. Still time for your thoughts on empathy, where you see it, and how you've changed your approach to engaging on social media conversations. We're at 800-642-1234. Caitlin, let's look at social media use during the 2016 elections. Trolling and public shaming were part of a national conversation. How much influence does social media have on our electorate, on our voters?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that was something people didn't pay as much attention to until the 2016 election, even though it was happening before. I think in two major ways. So one of them is the way that, you know, large dark forces were sort of able to take control of people via social media during that election. So you know, people from other countries paying for advertisements or to spread misinformation. And there is, you know, some evidence that that did sway some people's votes. They read this quote unquote fake news that was funded by outside people and it, you know, swayed how they voted. But the other way, as you mentioned, is the bullying and arguing and shaming that happened between friends and family members and strangers on these platforms. And I think what it is, you know, it's normal and it's human for us to get heated and, you know, defensive and upset about things that feel like they're really part of our identity. And I think that's what politics has been for a lot of people, a growing number of people over the past few years. And then when you are put into this social media landscape where there's this pressure to post, say what you think, there's no time to, you know, consider it. It's just right now you have to say something. That spells for a, you know, not a great situation.
Where is this pressure to post coming from?
I think that with younger people, especially, you, all of your friends are on these platforms. Everyone is, it kind of goes back to that thing we talked about before, where you see images of people and you kind of get a sense that that's their whole life, but they're curating what their life is like. I think that the same thing happens with people who post a lot about politics or other issues that they are concerned about. It's this sort of competition feeling when you're spending all of your free time on these platforms that can feel like it's the most important thing.
We know people get caught in these filter bubbles. They get caught in these feedback loops. And social media does focus on content that generates the most intense emotional responses. So if people are already in their own areas, in their own tribes, if you will, is empathy, I mean, is it even possible because people have already self-sorted with their views?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think now there is a growing awareness that that's an issue and that people are starting to want to, you know, make room for more empathy in these discussions and these parts of their lives. I think an easy thing to do is just expand the way that you curate your feeds. So, for example, I follow some people on Twitter and Instagram. I don't use Facebook as much anymore, but I follow some people who I don't align with on views, but I want to understand better where they're coming from, or I want to know, you know, if they mention something that doesn't make sense to me, I want to be able to look it up. And I don't engage with these people. I like, the point isn't to respond to them or have a conversation necessarily, but just to kind of learn from a distance. And I think that's a really easy, you know, low pressure way to start to open up your bubble.
I think you've used two words to describe how you feel about the future of empathy, and you use the words hope and humility. Where are we headed in our world with our devices and empathy, and how are you feeling?
So I'm feeling hopeful, as you mentioned, but also so. The bulk of the book does talk about people who are working to create new products, new programs, new tools that can help us go forward technologically while keeping empathy. And what I got from them was a sense of hope for sure, and also a sense of humility that they understand, and I understand, that empathy is not going to solve these problems, right? It's not going to stop us from having these heated political discussions. It's not going to stop bullying. But that empathy is a piece of the foundation that we need going forward. And after interviewing these people, trying out some of these tools, and especially after talking to young people who are interested in going into these fields and who really understand that the way they're doing things now with technology isn't sustainable, I definitely do have hope. But yeah, with a dose of humility in there as well.
Where does that humility come from? Is it more of like a caution in adopting new technology?
Yeah, that is definitely part of it. So at the end of the book, I give people kind of a few tips for how to decide whether to use new technology. And part of this is because the things that we're going to be seeing are not going to be like Facebook, Instagram, those things, we're going to start seeing more technologies that are more invasive, you know, things that we wear and could potentially transmit our feelings in the future. And so I want people to think about, you know, how these things might improve their life or experience when they're deciding whether to use them. And if there's the potential for manipulation with these tools, you know, virtual reality, if it can help instill empathy, it could potentially be manipulative. So I think what I'm going for here is there's hope in these things, but there's also potential dangers. And I want people to be more intentional and thoughtful and ask questions about these things before they, you know, get distracted by how exciting and shiny and new the technology is.
Caitlin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Caitlin Ugalik-Phillips is the author of the book, The Future of Feeling, Building Empathy in a Tech-Obsessed World. And you find this conversation on The Morning Show. You're listening to The Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're with us for our winter member drive on WPR. I'm here with Maureen McCollum. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
We're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy, programs like The Morning Show. Support from people like you is the biggest piece of the funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
We have 5 minutes left this hour, and we're looking for five more people to join in. So that's just one person per minute. We can do that. Mm-hmm. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs you rely on every day.
And thank you so much if you've already given. And if you haven't, what's holding you back? The time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So in this hour of The Morning Show, we've been learning about empathy in the digital age. We learned about virtual reality and its role in building empathy. It's these thought-provoking, unique discussions about ways to navigate the modern world. These are the kind of conversations that you count on from The Morning Show.
WPR is listener-supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It makes the many topics that you join us for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
And with that gift, you could get the brand new cozy and super stylish WPR hat. This knit hat is USA made right here in Wisconsin. Support the programs you value and show off your WPR pride wherever you go. It starts with your gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio for the shows we all know and love. But WPR is more than radio.
I'm Laurel White, and I am WPR's State Capitol reporter, and I am also one of three co-hosts of our weekly WPR Politics podcast. We really try to have fun with it and make it as entertaining and as accessible for people who might not be into politics, but we're also trying to consider those other political nerds out there that really want to get into the nitty-gritty and some of the fun details of the craziness that is the State Capitol.
Wisconsin Public Radio. It's more than radio. And when you give, you're a big part of what makes it all happen.
Thank you so much, Laurel White. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm here with Maureen McCollum this morning. And we're here to say it's listener support that is the biggest chunk of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this winter member drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
When five more people join in the next few minutes, we will meet our goal. And these hourly goals are set up to make sure that we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know WPR is personally important to you, and it's probably also important for you that everyone in the state has access to this high-quality information and entertainment.
So become a member with a contribution of, say, $10 a month or $120, and you're not only doing something good for yourself, you're doing something good for your whole community. WPR is listener supported, and that's why your participation is so important. Give now at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
And we are looking for those five more pledges this hour. Let's make the goal WPR's listener supported. And that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so critical.
Show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and ask for the new WPR hat, perfect for a day like today.
Yes.
This knit cap is both stylish and cozy and warm. It's yours when you give $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift right now is so important. It's powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.